Today's service is Caring for the Earth and Right Sharing of Resources by, I love this, Dan Wilson and the Quakers. It sounds like a rock group, but they're really just really great people. This will be a seventh principle and how it overlaps with several of the Quaker testimonies.
In the Quaker it doesn't really fit our simplicity testimony, but we'll deal with it. Great. So yeah, thank you all. Thank you all for having us come down this morning from our quiet library upstairs. So this morning we're talking about the connections between the Unitarian seventh principle, which is the respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are part, and its relationship to Quakerism. So for Quakers during the winter, we have what we call study group about once a month for January, February, March, which includes about a half hour of silence and then a half hour short discussion. So this is a thing that we kind of have talked about during our study groups, and what Ellen and I are presenting on today generally reflects our conversation. So in theology in general, right, and in religion in general, there's orthodoxy and orthopraxy. And orthodoxy means right thought, and orthopraxy means right practice. So, you know, a lot of religions generally spend a lot of time on orthodoxy. What do we think exactly? Why do we think that? What's the supporting evidence? And then other religions spend more time on orthopraxy, and right practice. And so on that spectrum, Quakers are squarely 100% into orthopraxy, or right practice. We don't really have a doctrine. We definitely don't have a doctrine, and we have a very kind of looser framework of guiding theological thought. The core guiding theological thought would be this belief that there's that divine light in everyone, that in everyone there's that of God. And as John Woolman said, John Woolman was an 18th century Quaker, this principle is pure, placed in the human mind, which in different places and ages maybe had different names. It is pure and proceeds from God. It is deep and inward and confined to no religion nor excludes any. Right? So that's kind of the bedrock of where Quakers stand. And I think it's one of those things where it's like, we know we believe this for sure. There are bigger questions of who is Jesus? What's his relationship? Does God exist? But in general, I think a lot of the thought on Quakerism is if we know this is true, there's a lot we can do with that information. And essentially that's what our faith and practice is, right? I think maybe we've talked about this in the past, but each group, we don't have a doctrine, right? But each group of Quakers creates this book that has kind of our testimonies, what we believe broadly, but also like just the logistics of being a Quaker. This is updated as often as possible. Each chapter has full consensus of all the Quakers in the area. Our Northern Yearly Meeting includes Minnesota and Wisconsin. So it's very much an active living document, and there's, I think, six or eight throughout the United States of different yearly meetings. Testimonies are, right, care for the earth, integrity, peace, equality, simplicity, and community. And care for the earth very much comes out of the sense that there's that divine spirit in everybody. But I think kind of the tension that we talked about was, you know, different Quakers, the belief of how far that divine light extends. Does it extend to animals, to blades of grass, to rocks, to things like that? Or putting it another way, like generally, where on this web of existence do we as humans stand? Are we, you know, in some sense outside of it in like the stewardship capacity? Are we like fully a part of it? So in our faith and practice, on our testimony about care for the earth, which is most closely related to the seventh principle, you know, we say many of us carry both the image of humans as a part of the whole earth and that of humans somehow estranged and alienated from that whole. We carry this image with a sense of frustration and sometimes with a sense of joy and wonder of that paradox. However we try to explain it, we share a sense that our relationship to the divine is intertwined with our relationship to the rest of creation. Brokenness in our interaction with the natural world grows out of a sense of separation from that spirit. And that's kind of about as much guidance as we give ourselves, right? Quakers really value the process of discernment and like wrestling with information. Even just this song that we sang this morning, "'Tis a Gift to Be Simple," old Quaker song, you know, "'To bow and to bend, we will not be ashamed. "'To turn and to turn will be our delights.'" I think that very much like means to change our minds, right? Like there's like Quakers hold an intrinsic value of being proved wrong and finding out something else is true is inherently good and great, and we want to celebrate that and lift that up. And so we give ourselves every time, right? We give ourselves every time every Sunday morning to wrestle with these questions in our own silence, to listen for answers. But we also give ourselves a spiritual community to be able to kind of bounce our answers off of each other, and in general, kind of a very broad theological container to hold some of these bigger questions in. So the question of, you know, where are we in this web of existence? Are we in it completely? Are we set apart somehow? Are we somehow a little bit of both? Quakers tend to enthusiastically say, we don't know, and that's okay. We answer our questions by doing this work, and similar to our theology of we know that there's a divine light in everyone, and that's enough for us to start doing a lot of stuff. I think similarly, we know that we are intertwined with the natural world around us. How exactly and what does that intertwining look like? We aren't really sure, but we have enough information to change the way that we live and to start doing that. And I think that's one of the reasons why Quakerism is kind of a weird religion, because when these big questions about the world comes up, and generally Quakers say, I don't know, or like, whatever you think is probably good for you, right? Like, we don't really provide easy answers, but what we do seek to provide as a meeting is companionship for that journey, and a space to listen to each other for our own answers, and a space to kind of hear each other's answers. That's not to just say that like, that you can demolish the environment and claim to be doing God's work. We are always trying to test our answers in community, which also includes the community of past friends, which I will touch on later after Ellen.
Can you guys hear me? It's good to see you all again, and friends with a small F, I guess. So Dan started with our testimonies, and I'm going to go into those a little bit more. How our specific testimonies relate to your seventh principle? It was more like leaving out some testimonies that don't relate to that, because most of our testimonies are fairly inclusive. We think about our testimonies as a bridge between faith and practice. So if we value and we have faith that we're part of the we see that of the divine in every living thing, then our testimonies are, well, how do we put that into practice? Several of them relate to our call to care for the earth, strengthening our place in the interdepartment web. Our first testimony is called Care for the Earth. So that's fairly straightforward. And out of that have come several Quaker organizations, including American Friends Service Committee, something called EQUATE, which is pretty new. It stands for Earth Quaker Action Team. There's a group, Right Sharing of World's Resources, that specifically target how we use our money, how it's moved around, how we invest it, and it's also with just equity about food, clean water, those kinds of things. Earth Care Witness and Quaker Climate Action. There are probably more out there, but those are just the five that I'm familiar with and that are more national organizations. The second testimony that I think pertains to the web of life is the peace testimony. If anyone has seen any satellite images of what's happening in Ukraine and Gaza, that is going to take a lot of input to fix. So, and not only peace internationally, but what about the armament industry, for example? Everything that There's also the opposite. So every time we're investing in weapons, we're not investing in peace. And so that always has that dual thing that Dan kind of talked about. You know, look at the other side as well. And I like how Mr. Rogers talked about this. Look at the helpers. So whenever there are situations of war or destruction, you're also going to see those people, like all of you people that I see all around doing all kinds of good things. You're going to see the helpers as well. And I think, you know, as a Quaker, we try ways to connect our testimony of equality with the climate migration, as well as, you know, sharing of the resources and keeping them, keeping opportunities for everyone to partake in the richness of the earth. We have a testimony of simplicity, which for me probably defines this or helps stay the course with care of the earth. And simplicity, again, as Dan alluded to, it's not a prescription for how you live your life, but rather, I think, considering the through line of all our actions. So, for example, my husband and I lived in a boathouse for the first 5 years of our marriage. It was a 10 to 20 space, 200 square feet. Every time one of us came home with something, something was going to have to go. So that always involved a lot of negotiation. What's going to happen to this thing? Who's going to use it? And it was just a real crash course on simplicity. And once you start seeing things that way, I think it really carries over. The other thing about simplicity that I love is I myself can get very discouraged about what's happening and what we see going on. And these acts that any of us can do is helpful. So, for example, last night I was out at Prairie Island with my little buddy that I babysit on Friday and Saturday nights. Somebody had dropped like 6 cans of Bud Light on the side of the road. They were empty. And we picked them up. So that was not monumental by any means. But later I was thinking about it. It gave me a lift because it feels good and things look better. We can recycle that aluminum. And my little guy Milton asked, why'd you pick those up? Aren't they dirty? So just, well, that's litter. That's not supposed to be there. Sometimes it can actually harm, you know, animals and birds. And so a lesson learned, hopefully. And then community is the last testimony that I think really talks to our care of the earth. And that is something that all you people do so well. And just these little or big things we can do in our community that can make a real difference. I did want to talk about how some of these simple acts and in the context of community can really make a big difference. So back in 2011, I had the opportunity of going out to Pine Ridge with global partners through my employer, Gunderson Health, whom I worked for 31 years, and made 4 trips out to South Dakota. We worked in Porcupine Clinic. And then we'd have these little interactions with people that lived there. And one man that we met was Ed Ironcloud. And he took us out to where they were establishing a buffalo herd. And the buffalo, of course, play a huge role in the Lakota culture, but they had specifically wanted to get this herd going again because the buffalo were gone, and they used the buffalo in a lot of their ceremonies. So they taught the older teens how to kill a buffalo humanely, and then they would use it in their sun ceremony in August. They would sacrifice one animal per year. And he was telling us about all of this. My daughter was with me. She was 16 at the time, Iris. And he started talking about how back in the late 70s, the American Friends Service Committee came out and built the fencing for our buffalo herd. So buffalo take different fencing. They need a lot of space. It's, you know, 4x4s or 6x6s. and then really heavy gauge wire. And so my daughter and I were kind of chuckling, and Ed Ironcloud says, "Are you a Quaker small child?" Because he had, he named our daughter. And it was a totally unexpected way that probably a pretty small group of people had come out, put up this fencing for their buffalo herd, and made a really big difference in their quality of life, their, you know, educating their youth. And it wasn't necessarily a proud moment for me, because of course I hadn't been there doing it, but rather these little things can really make an impact. And so it was a good lesson not to get discouraged. I'm just going to read a quote from John Woolman from 1763 in a writing, A Plea for the Poor. John Woolman urged friends to examine their lives to see if there might be the seeds of war nourished in these our possessions. Are we sowing the seeds of renewal and healing, or of continued ecological decline and attendant resource wars? So I'm just going to leave you with that thought about how we put into practice what we say we believe.
A little bit more discussion of, how kind of our cloud of witnesses, as Quakers talk about it, both past and present. So Ellen talked about John Woolman. He's an American, one of the earliest American Quakers, 17th century, and really was very instrumental in pushing Quakers to be very strong abolitionists, both here in America, but also when he died, he was traveling to Europe to push English Quakers to be even more staunch abolitionists. So he was a person who very much saw that the divine light that existed in humans existed in animals as well, right? And so for that reason, specifically, he was a vegetarian. Not only was he a vegetarian, he also refused to ride in stagecoaches because he thought that was too harsh of a treatment to horses. He has a great quote where he talks about, my mind was moved to love God as an invisible, incomprehensible being on the same principle that it was moved to love all of his manifestations in the visible world. That as by his breath, the flame of life was kindled in all animals and sensitive creatures. To say that we love God and at the same time exercise cruelty towards the least of these creatures is a contradiction in and of itself. Which is, I think very striking for someone to live in the 1700s to be talking about. And when we were talking about this as a group, I was kind of reflecting on, it would have been, I think the thing that really appeals to me about Quakerism is kind of taking these simple truths and like running them to their logical conclusion, which I think is really powerful. And I think, sitting here in 2020, it's very easy to say that was really easy to do in the 1700s. Like the world was simpler, there was slavery, like that seemed like it should be fairly obvious. Whereas today, we are kind of so interconnected in all these ways that it's really hard to have this strong purity of action that the Quakers were able to really do during that time. But the reality is that at that time in the 1700s, things were also very intertwined, right? I think Ellen talked about the seeds of war, right? That's very much a John Woolman idea of to look at our possessions and where in our possessions do we see the seeds of war. And I think kind of another modern corollary to that is the quantity of our possessions, right? Like here in the Western world, we have a huge footprint. And I think, right, like looking at the oil that we consume, especially in relation to climate change, is a seed of climate change, right? And climate change in and of itself is a seed of conflict. And just, so in John Woolman's time, that was a thing that he was encouraging people to do. He was a merchant. And then stopped being a merchant so that he could do more evangelizing. And he was a tailor. And so as a tailor, he learned that in a lot of fabrics, as they were dyed, that was often slave labor that was used to dye fabrics. So he only wore undyed fabrics. He also learned that a lot of precious metals like silver remind using slave labor. So he stopped eating and using silver. When he would go and stay at somebody's house, if they had slaves, he would always he would always pay them for his labor as he left. He always made sure that if anyone gave him service, that he was paying for that service. He also started free stores, which only sold goods that were made by paid labor, by non-slave labor. And at the time, they didn't really work. There wasn't enough stuff for them to sell, so they didn't really last that long. But they were actually pretty, after he died in 1760, they became really popular before the start of the Civil War, and it was kind of like one of those things that helped increase that conflict. So he very much embodies, you know, I think kind of this modern approach to environmentalism, like looking at what we consume as part of the way that we exist in the world, this whole like voting with your dollar idea. And so today Quakers participate, you know, in actions very similar to Woolman's, kind of being critical of what we use and how we use it, but also advocate very strongly at a policy level. The Friends Committee on Nonviolent Legislation is a very kind of unique and powerful lobbying group in Washington. They also have a very strong voice on environmental issues. The Quaker Earth Care is a group specifically to help Quaker meetings and other Quaker individuals become leaders on environmental issues in their communities. Ellen talked about the American Friends Service Committee. So I think for Quakers in general, we hold this like value of being able to do practical things every day, but also are we looking at some of the more systemic things that speak to the larger issues of the society we live in. And I think just, you know, I think we've talked a lot about how the personal journey is really important for Quakers, so just talking about my personal relationship with this testimony. Care for the Earth and kind of Quaker relationship to it is really important to me. It's one of the reasons why I started farming. And for folks that don't know, I graze cows south of town here. I've been doing that since 2017. I graze in such a way in order to sequester carbon in our pastures, but also to improve wildlife habitat and to improve the water quality of the water that both comes onto our land and leaves our land. And to me, I think I've like, you know, I have this deep desire and maybe potentially a spiritual urge to have a connection with my environment. And so by managing cows and by managing pastures, I feel like I can have a relationship with the place that I live. And by relationship, I mean like an actual like give and take, right? Talking and listening. So when I manage my pastures, I move cows in a certain way, then that way changes day to day, and I will like see how the pasture responds to that. I remove some trees, I plant different plants, change location of fencing and things like that, and then I want to see and listen to how the pasture responds. And in that way, I feel like I'm having a conversation with the place that I live. And then that way, I feel like I'm able to have like an actual relationship. And it feels, in a lot of ways, I feel that kind of having a foot in both worlds of feeling like, in some ways, that I'm stewarding, I'm above kind of taking care of this environment, this pasture, but I'm also at the same time very much in relationship with it and in conversation with it. And always with Quakerism, I think the other thing that really sticks out to me is this pressing need and this pressing desire to just listen and to learn. And for myself, this guides my understanding of both how I interact with my environment, but also how I view myself as the web of life that we are all a part of. So that's all that we have prepared, but we do have time for some questions. We have what we call unprogrammed meeting for worship, which means that we don't have a plan. So it's about an hour of silence, and if folks feel so moved, if they feel like the Spirit is urging them to say something to the group, someone will stand up or someone will say something. That happens maybe once a month or so. So the most part is just silence. And I think it is... in general, it's not, you know, it maybe looks like meditation, but I think there's an interesting distinction between meditation being like a more inward practice and Quaker meeting being like a listening practice. So like actually kind of like listening for something outside of yourself. And sometimes that thing that you're listening to is birds, sometimes it's bells, sometimes it's a baby crying. You know, so it's like there's a lot of great and interesting thoughts and writing around that.
Central to the Quaker practice is silence, and it is different than meditation in that we're listening for the small voice of God inside of ourselves. And Quakers actually got their name because when you hear a message come forward that feels like it's bigger than just kind of your individual word, you get a little shaky. And so the Quaker name was that feeling that we get before we speak out of the silence. And it was kind of a, I don't know, sort of a teasing kind of name. It was given to Quakers outside of the Society of Friends. So we kind of, I guess, took on our own slur.
Yeah.
We own it. And so that's what the silence is all about.
Do you know more about those kids?
Of course, we've experienced a similar situation that you guys have experienced where our youth have really aged out. And that's not limited to just us. That is kind of a national thing that's happening. But Friends educate their children in what we call first day school. So because Quakers did not follow the sort of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, because that was kind of based in pagan practice, we call it first day, second day, third day. And so first day is Monday, and that's where the first day school came from. And then we would take the children out, similarly to how you guys do it, and just give them a Quaker lesson. They would learn to be silent for about 15 minutes, but we have great stories about how that doesn't happen. And, you know, little guys saying things like, why is everybody sleeping? And things like that. So we do have that. The larger meetings are a little more organized than we ever were, but we did have first day school for many, many years. And then there is a camp, Camp Woodbrook, which is in the Driftless area. I think it's south of Richland Center. And my middle daughter was a counselor there for many years. So she worked for like 4 summers. And they really follow the Quaker principles of simplicity, community, peace. And they actually, in recent years, have been quite challenged because they're getting groups of kids that have been court-ordered to have sort of a nature experience with a group of, you know, peacemakers, I guess. So she was part of that, where they had a bunch of kids, you know, from Chicago, Milwaukee, that they would take on canoe trips down the Kickapoo and bicycling trips. And, you know, it was a really small camp, so I think they were really challenged. But, you know, I think they did pretty well with it. I don't think there were too many awful outcomes, but it was pretty challenging.